Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 3 by Out of the Park Developments. It is available today on Steam and through our website at Out of the Park Developments for $39.99. Get it today. It is the next generation of hockey strategy. Thank you as always for listening to the Press Row Podcast. Enjoy the show.
There's no ignoring the rise in popularity of esports. Games like League of Legends, Dota 2, and Counter-Strike dominate that scene. But given the money involved, companies like EA Sports and 2K Sports naturally want to be involved in that world. The trouble is, they're not even on the radar at this point, as they've stumbled out of the gates attempting to gain footing in the space with Madden and NBA 2K respectively. And there are some inherent problems that seriously challenge their growth. Rich Gresham is here with me, and this subject is something we discussed back in June, but we're going to revisit it here given recent developments and as the promotions for the second year of these esports get underway, but major problems are already being encountered. So Madden has four official competitions, each have $250,000 in their prize pool. The first is now underway. NBA 2K17 hasn't even detailed its competition yet, but assumptions are it'll once again utilize the 2K Pro-Am mode, which has been troubled in some ways ever since release, but even more seriously with connection issues plaguing it ever since a patch in October. Before we get into the latest controversy that's maybe damaging the legitimacy of Madden's first competition, Rich, how about we talk briefly about our general opinion on the way these competitions are run and the potential for them to catch on in the esports world?
Sure. Well, for one, it's a great idea to do it, because if anybody pays attention to what is called esports, you quickly see that it is this incredibly popular, incredibly lucrative, and incredibly unregulated scene.
<true. Yeah.
And so anybody in the video game world and anybody particularly in the sports game world looks at that and goes, well, I would love to create that same level of excitement and buzz and money, right? I mean, that's what companies are in this for, at least in part, is to make a profit so that they can keep making the games that they want to make, right? So what's also interesting is I don't see any real legitimate crossover between fans of sports and fans of esports. And it's really not that surprising if you look at it. The languages are completely different. You know, if you talk about esports, if you go to the ESPN esports site, which is relatively new, and that in and of itself is some crossover, or you read any real esports coverage, you get lost very quickly because the language that they speak is just very different. Just like somebody who stumbles upon a normal page of ESPN, if they don't know much about the sports that they're reading about, there's a lot that when you read something about any particular subject that the writer tends to assume the reader knows. Mm-hmm. But in esports, it's really specific really quickly. Whether you're talking about League of Legends or whether you're talking about Heroes of the Storm or Hearthstone, you just so quickly, the language being used is very confusing. And because it is electronic competition and the contestants are sitting there staring at a screen the whole time, I just don't see that same sort of crossover between regular sports and esports. And that's not, I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, but it brings it all into significant relief when you talk about sports, video game, esports. There's very little history, and the history that there is bears no resemblance to what modern esports look like when we talk about Dota, League of Legends, and so on. So it's a wild and crazy situation. I'm not surprised that everybody in the traditional console sports world is trying to get into it. We know that EA has taken Peter Moore and said, go make this happen. So it's just a fascinating world to watch really unfold and evolve and be created right in front of our eyes.
Yeah. You know, I think if you were to look at the esports scene and say, you know, what would really cross over? What would be something that a large audience could that they could delve into, that someone who's new to it could understand what's going on? And you say, well, sports games, naturally, because people who watch sports understand it. These games are trying to replicate what is being done in real life, as opposed yes. to the other games, which are fantasy related or war related, which are generally not based around realistic concepts and strategies. So
right.
So when you see something like, it was a couple of years ago, or a year ago, or whenever, there was a ESPN2, I believe, broadcast a Heroes of the Storm esports. And I don't know if you remember, but social media was
oh, I do.
In arms. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because everybody was just like, what am I actually watching? What is going on? These people are going crazy. They're nuts about it. The announcers are going insane. But I have no idea what's actually happening exactly. on screen, right? So you would think if you put Madden up there, that people would say, okay, I know football already, or at least people who know football already. I can understand what's happening. But the funny thing about that is it actually hurts Madden, because it becomes an alternative. The video games become an alternative to the real sports. If you want to watch the best, you know, the performers in a sport, top of their game, you're watching the NFL, you're watching the NBA, you're watching college football, you're watching Premier League, whatever it might be, you're watching the real sports, and then the video game of that is an alternative. It's supplemental to the real sport. You're not necessarily seeking out, okay, for my evening's entertainment, I want to watch someone play Madden, as opposed to those other games, right, where they are the top, they are excelling in a way that people at home maybe can't, or they're compelled by in a way, because there's nothing else out there like it, right?
Right. The other thing to consider is that the esports world, the demographics of the esports world are, in my opinion, completely different from the demographics of your sports fan and sports video game fan, generally speaking. So you're really trying to bring two different worlds together in a way that may or may not work. So what happens ultimately with sports video games is that the esports becomes a catch-all, but it really bears no resemblance to the esports of the League of Legends and the Dotas. It's staged and set up as a typical sports competition is, with a tournament tree or in groups and ladders and stuff like that. So that's another interesting aspect of trying to take the idea of esports in the more, and it's funny to say, quote, air quote, traditional esports world, and set the structure up more like traditional sports to try to appeal to more sports video game fans so that they would, you know, potentially participate. But the one thing I think also that we have to remember, because of the different demographics, people like you and me, Brian, aren't the audience for esports. And
yeah, it seems so. Uh-huh.
And the way that we sort of traditionally consume media, like you say, oh, you know, at the end of the day, come home and watch Madden. That's not how a lot of people do stuff, right? Like, a lot of people are watching and consuming video all the time. Sure. And they don't sort of base their times of their day around watching or consuming particular kind of media. It's just, oh, that's there, I'll watch it for 5 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, or I'll watch the highlights. And the way that they pay attention to and participate in those worlds is very different than people like you and me in our generation.
But we do occasionally watch streams, but it's when there's a connection to us, right?
Yes.
When it's our people yes. in our franchise or whatever. Yep. It's a lot harder ask to, because you have no connection to the people in these tournaments generally, right?
I don't know any of these guys, and
right.
and that, again, we're not the target demographic. Because we don't know them doesn't mean that thousands or tens of thousands of people don't.
And over time that changes, and with these other games, absolutely. I mean, there are stars of esports, right? There are star teams, there are individuals who are well known.
Well, I will say, though, another area that makes it hard for me to follow esports, because I did some work in the esports world for the Sporting News for quite a bit of time last year, so I learned quite a bit about it. There's so much change. And when I say change, I don't mean little change. I mean teams get created and then disappear over the course of 6 months or a year. And the concept of dynasties and long-term teams is it's there, but it's not nearly as prevalent in, again, traditional sports. And yeah, there are a couple of big-time famous players, particularly in the world of League of Legends, but there's not the same, like, you could probably find, and again, I know I'm not the demographic, but it's the recognition of the top 10 or 20 players in the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball is completely different than the recognition of the top 10 or 20 players in any of the big esports. So that, you know, other areas too. But again, the people who are into this, I mean, these competitions fill massive stadiums and get millions of people watching on Twitch live around the world. The last thing I'm doing is diminishing them or saying they're not that popular or they're not that legitimate. It's quite the opposite. And that's part of the other challenge, is because it's so different, the audience and the way that people watch it and follow it, it's a major challenge for the traditional sports video game guys to find the right mix.
Yeah, and really the other major issue that sports games have is, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's they're intended to simulate or represent something that you see on TV or you see in person or something real. But when there's money on the line, people are going to do what they have to do. And what that means is the games don't actually look like the sport they're representing. The way people play, whether it's calling the same plays over and over, using the same tactics over and over, punting or never punting, that kind of stuff. It takes the interest. What I would be interested in more are the things that you don't see in these games because of that. The coaching decisions, you know, oh, it's instead of just going for it on fourth down all the time, well, you know, what is this person going to do here, as opposed to, oh, well, I already know what they're going to do because nobody ever punts. Or, you know, throwing the same routes or utilizing the same exploits throughout. And, you know, I learned that by watching Madden's competition last year, where people did the same things over and over. Not particularly fun to watch. And I'm not sure if that's a great determination of who is the quote-unquote best player, right? It's whoever's manipulating the game the best way, as opposed to who might be the smartest player or whatever. There has to be some mix of strategy and stick skill type of things, instead of just, well, I've labbed this play and it works 95% of the time, and if I do this four straight times, I'm gonna get a first down.
So you bring up a couple interesting points that you and Kat in particular and I have talked about, in that in too many ways the game that's played in the competition doesn't truly look like a real game. I agree to some degree, but I've also been watching some of these Madden Championship streams, which have been going on, and it's not always crazy. Like, they run the ball up the middle regularly. That looks like football. They do a couple of adjustments here and there. That looks like football. They call multiple plays. But the other thing that I've been considering is, we make that statement that, okay, well, it doesn't necessarily play like the real game. But again, I think that's sort of thinking of it in a traditional sense, that people who are really into watching the Madden Championships or the other games, they do realize it's a game and don't even care, because they're looking at it from the game perspective and even watching it not only because it's a Madden Championship, but because when they watch these guys, they'll get their own good ideas on how to play and win in their franchise, or just offline just to have fun or things like that. So because we think it's kind of a problem, doesn't mean that the people who this appeals to thinks that a problem. In fact, they might look at it the other way. It is a game, and these guys are the best at it, and I can get better at playing the game by watching them. I don't know. I'm not saying that is the case, but I keep thinking, like, we have to make sure that we think about this differently sometimes, because the way that we view these doesn't match the way of everybody else. But on the other hand, yes, there's some ridiculousness that happens on the field because it's a video game, and that's where it really gets interesting. Hmm. Is how much tweaking, tuning, modifying does EA make to, and or NBA 2K make to its games to accommodate that? They have a tremendous amount of ability to very quickly make adjustments if they want to, and they have to find the right balance between making sure that everything as much as possible is legitimate gameplay, making sure that it doesn't look like just something so ridiculous that nobody would want to watch it, and yet not doing anything too much to where there are only a few plays that people can run. There's just so many different factors happening here.
They also, I think, they try and regulate out chance or randomness from these things, because you look at like patch notes and you'll see reduce the number of dropped passes or something. You're like, oh yeah, that's probably because of their competitions and they don't want somebody losing because of a dropped pass. But dropped passes happen in real life, right? And we've argued, Rich, over penalties. They take out penalties from these type
of... Thank goodness. Ugh.
And I totally disagree with that.
I know you do.
But
as does most people. I realize I'm in the vast minority on the issue of penalties in Madden, in that they're terrible and yeah. No one needs them.
Well, yeah, we know your point of view on this, Rich. but like that to me also hurts it, because you don't see anybody overcoming things. You know, if there is a fumble, people get upset about that. It's like, oh, I didn't, you know, why'd my guy fumble? It's like, well, you know, you have someone with a low fumble rating or something, then, and you got popped.
It happens.
Or somebody used the strip button. Yeah, you know.
I mean, look, when the Eagles were ahead of the Lions very late in the game this year, and they had the game won, all they had to do was run it out, and Ryan Matthews fumbled the ball late, you know, and the Lions got it and kicked the game-winning field goal as time ended. Like, it happens. It's terrible, but those things happen in the NFL. And I feel very differently about things like fumbles in Madden than I do about turnovers, because one is, in my opinion, different than the other. We'll have that conversation some other time. But, yeah, that happens. Turnovers are absolutely a part of the game in a way that you can't. I mean, it's easy to say, but when it happens to you late in the game, you know, you can't help yourself. But you can't get you have to have those in a game of football.
Yeah, it's ironic to me that there would kind of be a regulation of, or you know, removal of things that happen by chance that are based on ratings, but then you have certain plays or certain tactics that work too much and certain ones that are not effective, and that's okay. So, like, people can run the same play over and over. That's okay, but a fumble, not okay. I don't think that really matches up, but...
It's okay to have a rule set based upon certain things. In other words, I'm okay with, if you're setting up a tournament, a big-time esports tournament, and you're like, look, here is the structure for our tournament, or, you know, here are the rules of the road, and we do have turnovers turn way down, and we do have penalties turn way down, because we feel at this level of competition that's the right way to do it. As long as everybody sort of goes in knowing that, I'm cool with it. I think it's okay to have those kinds of things in place. And then in other, you know, in the quote-unquote standard game of Madden that you just play when you're playing against the computer in your own online, in your own franchise, or playing against your friends, is different, with penalties perhaps up more and turnovers and penalties and fumbles up more, because the stakes are not nearly as high, and it actually does reflect the actual game of football that you would see on a Sunday.
All right, so the first round, the first competition for Madden just kicked off. Well, there was a qualifying period in October, maybe it went back to September too, but we're now in that online elimination period where the people who qualified are going through an online tournament. And we've already seen one. This is kind of a big deal now. It's an exploit that's being utilized by certain people, and it's sure to spread at this point as more people learn about it and see its effectiveness. And it's known as the wide receiver swerve. Okay, now what's happening is people are throwing the ball deep, clicking onto their receiver, and instead of, you know, taking a straight line to the ball, they are kind of guiding the defensive back out of the way by swerving to the side, and the defensive back follows them, and then they're able to readjust and get back and catch the ball, and there's nothing the defensive back can do about it. And it's been shown already. I have to give credit here to Zach Neal, who goes by Zan. His Twitter's Zan_4PM. He did a great video about it, showing from an actual tournament game a few examples of someone who used it for touchdowns. And funny enough, anytime they got into the red zone, couldn't score, because you need the space to do this. So it's got to be a deep pass, because you have to have time to click on the receiver and move the defensive back out of the way. But essentially, there's no counter to it. It doesn't matter what defensive call you make. You're not going to be able to necessarily stop it, or it's going to work enough. It's going to get you eventually, because the defensive back does not adjust to it. CPU defense does not adjust to it. And in most cases, you don't have the amount of time necessary to click on and control the defensive back early enough to prevent it from happening. So I went back and looked, and this is not something new in the game. I looked on YouTube. There are videos of the wide receiver swerve going back to the end of August. So this is something that was in the game to begin with, and I just didn't know about it. But this is another example exploits being utilized because money is on the line, and exploits being utilized to advance and probably knock out people who are better than them by using it. But this doesn't just affect the competitive area either. I mean, this could happen to you online just in a regular game. And so it brings up a lot of questions as to what should EA do about it, if anything. If they do something, does that also, in a way, delegitimize a competition by changing the rules midway through?
No.
You don't think it does. I do.
No, there's no illegitimacy of changing, of making a patch to your game to fix an exploit if you believe that it's truly an exploit. Because when you make the patch, everybody remains on the same level. And if the only way that you're able to play the game is to use the exploit over and over and over again, then even more of a reason to allow a update or a patch or even just a tuning change or something else. It does not delegitimize anything at all. Look, this is life, right? It in sports, you go in with a game plan, you execute your game plan, and if you're down 14-0, 5 minutes in the game, or 24-3 entering the third quarter, you make adjustments, you change things, you replace players, you change your quarterback. You know, whatever we're talking about, it's okay to make adjustments on the fly. If you find things wrong, you fix them, or if you discover certain options to be successful, you go for it.
Yeah, so the dilemma in that, though, is that those who did utilize the exploit have moved on in the tournament already, and people they're gone. They're done. They're out. They have no
God
chance
bless
at
them.
The money, right?
They figured it out, and they were able to use it while they could. And again, they look, it's not easy to do the wide receiver swerve. It's not like I'm going to do the wide receiver swerve and I'm going to do it 25 times in a row and score 25 touchdowns. Yes, somebody or variously independently, several people found out that you could do this pretty technically difficult move that will often result in a very positive thing. But it's not like It's not just, oh my gosh, I just hit a button and I score a touchdown every time. Like it's hard to do this. It takes practice and work, and you're utilizing the game as it is there right now. So that's another aspect of this. And so now, and for a little while or a longer than a little while, EA has known about this. And I'm sure that they have, and I don't know this. I mean, yes, everybody affiliated with the show has relationships with different people that work on the game. But I mean, I'm sure when I say I'm sure, it's not because I know that I've talked to them, but I've just, because this is their job and their life, they know different things that they could do to potentially address it. And I'm sure they will make an adjustment based on this if and when they think it's right. So it's, yes, it's an exploit, and yes, it can be done, but it's not exactly easy to do. It takes work, and now, of course, the people who are probably going to advance to the top of the Madden leaderboards probably know how to do this really well. So I'm totally cool if they make an adjustment, and then all of a sudden the wide receiver swerve doesn't work anymore, and you know what? If you're that good at Madden, you can figure out other ways to be successful. I mean, that's what it comes down to, in my opinion.
It's a difficult thing, though, especially if you're facing it.
It's definitely difficult.
So, it's not fair because there's really nothing you can do about it. And from the comments from EA so far, it seems they're not sure if they want to change anything. They've made some comments on Twitter.
Oh, good.
About it. And at first kind of just swiped it away like it wasn't a problem. People didn't really like that reaction, and now there's more of a bit of a discussion going on about it. So it's unclear what, if anything's going to happen. But I think if it continues to plague games, if the wrong people keep advancing or whatever, that's a problem. And it's like I said, if you fix it halfway through, that's great that it's fixed from there, but the people who lost to it already, or the people who have advanced, have gotten there in the wrong way. That's a concern to me, because we go back to, again, how can you invest yourself into watching this if you can't even be certain that, the best people actually have moved forward?
Well, I mean, to a degree, this is still a video game. You know, it's still computer software. It's still ones and zeros. It's still vectors and angles, right? So no matter what, this is not physical play of human beings on a actual field. This is computers. So no matter what, to a degree, if you decide that you're going to participate in an event like this or watch an event like this, you just have to accept certain things. And especially, I mean, if anybody knows anything about online video games, people find every exploit, every glitch, everything that they can possibly do to help themselves. This is just that's part of what this is all about. So you got to be go into any of this. If you're a participant, you go into this with your eyes wide open, that whoever you're playing, I just assume, knows everything about the game and can figure out how to find the most successful ways to get to a victory. That's just the way it is, no matter what. You got to know what you're getting into. And I think everybody that gets into these things pretty much does. Because, again, the world that we're in right now, if you're a serious Madden player, not only are you playing the game, but you're looking at YouTube videos and you're interacting with the community and you're doing deep analysis, you're getting in the lab, you know what's going on. There's nobody who's in this at any level of depth, I'm sure, of seriousness, that doesn't know all the different aspects of what's happening.
Sure. I just, as far as the possibility for this to become more popular with Madden and stuff, I think
that's a whole other part, right?
I think they have to clean a lot of this stuff up, and it's not going to happen in 1 year. As we saw, there were issues last year. There's new ones this year.
Well, what are the numbers like? Like, how many people are watching this? I mean, $250,000 each is $500,000. I mean, people may say, oh, that's not a lot of money for a $1 billion company or half billion dollar company. But it's a lot of money to invest. And I would be shocked if, I mean, I could, that's not true. I wouldn't be shocked. They could have I'm sure they do have a 3 or 4 or 5 year roadmap of the investments they want to make. And then ultimately the investment turns into revenue. Yeah. And so that $500,000 could be an investment, or sure, they could be saying, okay, well, no, we know that because people that are playing this mode in our thing are doing champions, draft champions, and we know that draft champions tied to Ultimate Team drives X number of dollars per user. So they might have arrived at that $500,000 knowing, basing it on, you know, a certain dollar derivative from Ultimate Team. Like, who knows how, whether this is true investment or whether this is, oh, you know, they're probably coming out ahead $3 million overall, even after paying out the $500,000. That's what I would love to, like, know. Sure. The math behind that. Are they viewing this right now as an investment that'll pay off years later?
They have to. It's not going to pay off right now.
Yeah, well, we don't know that.
Well, I mean,
we don't know that.
It depends, I guess, if you're looking for the numbers as far as how many people are watching. To be fair, we're not at the end of the tournament. We're not at the in person where they're going to really heavily promote it. Couple thousand, which is not great. Really does.
A couple thousand, you would want. I would think you would want more than that. A couple thousand people is a good number, but I would think you would want bigger numbers.
So, yeah, so we're not at the end point, but we talked about this last time when EA did do the big tournament. They even promoted it at E3, that the big end of the tournament was coming up, and then they only got, I think, like 10,000 people watching, which it sounds like
10,000, right, yeah.
But it pales in comparison, Rich, when we're talking about esports, where these other games consistently get tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, over a million watching.
Agreed. Those are different, right? Back to my earlier points. That's a different world. And there's the people who watch that will never watch, and this is a ridiculous thing to say, but I think it's still fairly accurate for the most part. The people who are super into Dota and League of Legends are not going to watch Madden and NBA.
Yeah.
And I would think a lot vice versa. I mean, you do have your TJ Lowermans who like League of Legends and sports video games. But in a lot of people I talk to, there's not a lot of those kinds of folks. I could be wrong. But it's just different. It's different. And those games have, relatively speaking, much longer histories to draw from, and frankly probably a bigger pool of people too to draw from, because most people I think who watch the League of Legends and the Dota esports competitions also play those games, and I think there's a lot more people who mm-hmm. play those games because they are free to play and they're on computer. I think that also contributes to it too. Mm-hmm. You know, the people who watch those things tend to play them, and there's millions of people who play Madden, but probably, I don't know, a quarter of the number of people, or maybe it's an eighth or a tenth of the people who play those other games, and that also will drive it. I would be very surprised if somebody who doesn't play Madden would watch the Madden Championships.
Well, not... You know, if you look at... and we talked a little bit about this before, too... if you look at just the pure streaming numbers, you have at any given time tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands watching those other games on a site like Twitch, and you might have a few hundred watching people stream Madden, it just doesn't really have it's just not a compelling draw to people, or sports fans, you know, have other things to watch. I don't know exactly what it is. I enjoy it sometimes, but it does not really reach a wide audience the way that other games do. So I think, you know, it's just an issue that they will have to try to claw their way out of. It's not going to happen immediately.
Well, they got good people doing it, right?
Like, well, they're dedicating themselves.
Yeah, we know that Steve Gibbons and Zach Farley are doing a lot of work over there. Those are guys that went to work at EA and have kind of, and this isn't their only thing, but this is part of what they're doing. And Donnie Moore is back, and I know that he's taken a pretty big role in this as well. So, you know, they've got the right people, and they're doing the right things, I think. Hopefully they look at this as something that's going to take time. I want it to be successful. Like, another reason that, even if it's not for me and you, Brian, I believe we collectively want it to be successful, because the more successful this is, just the better off we all are, for those of us who like sports video games, because what the most direct benefit should be, and I believe is, for everybody who plays sports video games, is that the gameplay should be good and should continue to be improved, because mm-hmm. if you want esports to be a fundamental part of it, you have to do your best to make the gameplay itself as finely tuned and balanced as possible, and that should correlate directly to a fundamentally better game. Should. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it does, but it should. I don't think there's nearly enough of a amount of time that's passed since they've been really focused on esports that you can draw any line to that being the case. But again, if you have a totally busted or even partially busted game, you know, it's one thing to talk about one glitch or one move that's a wide receiver swerve, but if there were four or five, right, then the whole thing would fall apart. So yeah. That's another area
there's plenty of time for them to find them, Rich. So yeah, we talk about the esports stuff not because we want it to fail, but because we think there actually is something there.
Oh, there is, for sure.
But it's got a ways to go, and we see the issues with it right now.
There's other things too, right? I mean, we read and see all the time now that the real NFL game ratings are in decline. So maybe I'm not saying that has anything to do with it. But obviously, if it's an NFL product and the real game is having, for whatever reason, a few less or more than a few less people paying attention to it, that can't be a trend that anybody wants to see if you're trying to be sports around NFL football.
But it hasn't caught on for NBA 2K either. They've only done it 1 year, obviously. We'll see what happens this year. But it was not a big draw last year either for NBA 2K. And there's no excuses about people not wanting to watch basketball. So we'll check back on this, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead, what actually happened with as far as how they handle this particular issue and anything else that comes up. And then the final part of the competition, the final end of the tournament where the money is going to be on the line, is in early December, I believe. So we will...
Not at the Super Bowl?
No. So this year they have four different ones. One runs here for this. It's almost like quarters, only there's also an off season. So there's four of them. So after this one, they start up another one, which may be coinciding with the Super Bowl. I'd have to look at the schedule. But yeah, total of $1 million over the four.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, man.
But if we want to just real quickly, that brings up one other thing. I don't think the money matters, Rich. To me, I don't think the money being on the line makes me more interested in watching. This is, going back a bit to earlier as to why people don't watch. I don't think the money does it for me. I mean, it incentivizes the people who are playing, obviously. Oh, yeah. It incentivizes more people to try out to get involved in these things. But I'm not sure you put a lot of money on the line and I care more about it. I mean, you seem to think, though, that you do.
Well, it's interesting because I've been to, even years ago, I went to the finals of, I think it was like the Virgin Music, or not Virgin Music, but like the Virgin Madden NBA Madden finals, where the winner of like Madden, I think, got $500,000. The winner of FIFA got $250,000.
Virgin Gaming, I think it was.
Right. And I mean, on one hand, $1 million, or a game that's for $250,000, on one hand you would think that would have an appeal, but you look back at the MLB 2K $1 million giveaways. That was $1 million those winners got. That's life-changing money to these kids who figure it out how to get really, really good at MLB 2K. Mm-hmm. to be able to pitch a perfect game on those settings
first. You had to do it first, and it would usually happen within like a few hours of the game being
and then another year they had like the tournament where they were playing each other. That really, obviously, I mean, the game ended, that did not have the only reason I think it got attention from anybody at all really was the controversies that you and Owen Good so interestingly chronicled. So, yeah, I mean, on one hand, it's compelling to watch two people compete where the one person is going to walk away with life-changing money. And on the other hand, I think there's some element of jealousy or not even awareness, right? Like if you're able to somehow put together some sort of a television commercial / YouTube commercial where you're able to in 10 seconds say $250,000 on the line, one night, two players, boom, and be like, oh, okay. And they get the message across, I get it. If you're able to like deliver something like that, you could potentially get people excited. But I think it's also about awareness. It seems like unless you follow, and this is maybe just because it's me and my little world, but unless you follow, like I wouldn't know that the Madden championships were going on if I didn't follow S. Gibbs and Z. Farrells and Donnie Moore. That's how I know it. That's going on. I mean, I don't go to their Facebook pages or anything, but none of the other places that I go visit on the web, there's anything about this. So I think awareness and also making – there's also probably some element of people like, well, I don't want to watch two people play for $250,000 of video game.
What does it do for you, right?
Right, exactly. That kind of ticks me off even.
Yeah, there
is. Not me, but you know what I'm saying.
It's interesting you mention that because there definitely is an animosity I see towards some of these people. I don't know if it's about the money. But like with the people who are exploiting this swerve, wide receiver swerve thing, where they like on social media and in the Twitch comments and stuff, some nasty stuff is said. Not that that's really unusual for the internet.
Well, no, you can't do anything on social media without nasty stuff. It's just impossible anymore.
Yeah. So all right. So we'll check back on this, but let's talk about a few other things here before we go, Rich. First. You know, we actually play games. We don't just talk about watching them. We play them.
Right.
What have you been playing since we last talked?
It's the same games, which I'm very happy about. I continue to play Pro Evolution. I've got the downloaded kits for all the leagues, Premier League, La Liga, Bundesliga. It just, man, it's so great, Brian. It's so great. I just love it.
Yeah.
Love it. I'm good at it, but I'm not great at it. So I'm doing well as Everton. But anytime I ever get on a little 2 or 3 match winning streak, boom, it ends. And it ends either by crashing out of the FA Cup against a championship side, which is embarrassing, or I went on like a little mini 3-game run in the Premier League. And I got to, I think, like 3rd place and then lost 2 in a row. And I've purchased a couple of players and sold a couple of players. And I haven't done a great job of, like, I've purchased players who have really high ratings. But then I realize in the sort of the formations that I use, they don't fit in nearly as well. So there's just, man, it's so good. The gameplay is so good. To me, it's so compelling. Building my team, managing my club, I love it. And of course, as always, Brian, we continue in our online leagues that we're in together. You and I believe, are in 2 of the same leagues.
In
Am I right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, good. It's hard to keep track. I show up and I play my games.
Yeah.
And but, you know, Gus Ramsey, our great friend Gus Ramsey, who worked at ESPN forever, now doing a really interesting job in coaching up and training budding newscasters and sportscasters and stuff, really good stuff. So he and I, and you and he, we've been in online Madden leagues for at least 5 years together, maybe more, 6 possibly.
Yeah, it's been, it goes a ways back.
It goes a ways back. And so he and I have played each other many times. And typically, whenever we played each other, it's been my Eagles versus his Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
However, this year in one of the leagues that we're in, we kind of all went with different franchises than our.
Yeah, I have the Lions, and that's not much fun. It was made worse by the injury to Matt Stafford being out for 9 weeks. I had no quarterback option, and it's not. It's. I'll tell you what, man. I love the realism of it, but it's not very fun when you don't have a quarterback. I don't have a good backup or anything.
If you don't have a quarterback on an offensive line in Madden, it's even worse than not having a quarterback on an offensive line in the real NFL. It's just rough. It's rough.
Yeah.
But so in this league, this is our Press Row League, the official Press Row League. Gus is the Bills, and I am the Bengals. And it was weird just in and out of itself. But, you know, my Bengals, I mean, we're doing okay, but we're not exactly in first place or anything. So this was kind of an important game. And Gus is really good, by the way, at bad. He's not, like, cheap good. Like,
yeah, I've had some battles with him. They're fun games.
Oh, we all have. They are. He's just really good.
You remember I beat him on a – I prevented his perfect season with a Hail Mary into the end zone as time expired.
Yeah, he wins Super Bowls. Like, he has won Super Bowls in our league. And it's not easy to win a Super Bowl in the Press Row League. So, and he's just a longtime player and really good. And so, I don't know how many times we played. He almost always beats me. Every once in a while I beat him. But he, if we played 20 games, he's probably won, I would say, 14 or 15 of them. I'd say maybe not as many. I think in the early days, I probably won a little more, but anyway, he's really good. And so this was our latest battle, but different teams than we typically do. So I'm the Bengals, he's the Bills. He got up 28-6, and because his backup running back Carlos Williams fumbled the ball like at least twice and maybe three times, and then I got a pass deflected off the helmet pick six interception. So like I made this ridiculous stupid rally that could, you know, only happened because of multiple turnovers and crazy plays, and there was a key holding penalty that called against him on a third down where he had gotten a first down and the holding penalty pushed him back. So my hatred of penalties worked for me in that situation. I wound up winning 32-28 very late in the game. It was a wild and crazy game. And Gus had his microphone on, his PlayStation gear microphone on, and let's just say I heard some quite angry words coming from the other end of it. Gus is a wonderful guy, gracious guy, but I just, you know, he got kind of screwed, you know, a couple of fumbles, you know, that weren't his fault, a bouncing off the helmet ball that goes in the air that I pick off and then run back for a score. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was crazy. And I won, and I needed that win. So I'm not unhappy about that in the least bit.
Yeah. Those are memorable. You know, I've lost some of my most memorable games in Madden have been losses. And I'm sure he'll remember that one for quite some time.
But the other fun thing about it is because of that history that we have in our leagues together, that also made it a lot more special. That had happened against somebody I was just playing randomly online or even somebody that's in our league that I didn't have that history with.
Well, and you have,
it would have been fun. But like against Gus, it was just it made it 10 times crazier. Yeah. And had I lost the game, I'd have been like, it's Gus. I lost to Gus. I'm happy losing to Gus. You know, I have no problem with that.
Yeah. And because it's the franchise, you have something on the line. That's a big part of it too. I mean, that's why you know, if I played TJ, who's basically, we have this great rivalry where all our games come down to the end. If I played him in just a random online game, I mean, I'm not invested in it the way that I am in a franchise game where the stats are saved and everybody sees the result and then we post highlights, and it's just a totally different experience. And that's, you know, what has made us so enjoy Madden the last few years more than anything. You know, for me, I've just been playing the same stuff. So I want to talk about the NES Classic, Rich.
Yes.
Yes, we don't have it.
Oh, I'm getting one. I don't know how or when. I'm getting one.
Hopefully, there's going to be more supply.
Actually, I'm getting two. And I don't say, like, I'm getting two. I want one for my son, and I want one for me. They're small and they're portable, so that's why I definitely want to have a couple. I mean, I want him to open one on Christmas, and I want me to open one on Christmas.
Yeah.
So I want one, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see when and how that happens.
Yeah, so there were no pre-orders for it, first of all. It's officially out now. I wanted one, and I was going to get an extra for you if I could from, you know, multiple retailers or whatever. But I'm not stressing out over it because it's, you know, it's like 30 years old. I think my life will go on without it.
yes, I can confirm, Ryan. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that. But I've still been trying. And so like last night I was up midnight my time as different websites were putting it live for a few moments, then it would go away, or the websites would crash. You'd get to a certain point in the checkout phase and it would crash. And then today, as we record this today, Amazon put it up And they say they sold out of it. I'm pretty sure if they did, they only had like five of them because no one ever saw it actually work. So it's been a real struggle to get them. And you see on eBay and Craigslist people selling them for $200, $300, $400. I think there have been some eBay listings that have ended over $1,000. I'm pretty sure those are never going to be paid for. But people are going crazy over this thing. And Nintendo, classic Nintendo, doesn't produce enough of them. This is not their first time doing this. You know, the Wii, it's like scarcity creates demand, or at least creates the buzz about it, right? Everybody's talking about something that is basically just a novelty. It's a, like you said, it's a really cool gift. It's fun to have. There's other ways you can play these games if you want, but it's just such a like a perfect little package and gives you everything you need in one, that everybody wants one for nostalgic reasons or to give to someone who never got to play these games properly. And
I'm
you
both.
Can't get it, so everybody wants it, right?
Well, it's early, though.
It's very early. I mean, there's supposed to be more supply, but it's definitely frustrating for people. I posted on Twitter. I'm like, all right, after I failed with the Amazon, after everything else last night, nothing worked out for me. Like, all right, you know what? If they don't want my money, fine. You know, maybe I'll buy it later on, but I'm not going to stress about it. It's annoying because normally, you know, we had no problems getting a PS4. We had no problems getting an Xbox One. There's plenty of PS4, PS Pros out there. you know, like the usually I thought we were past the point where a system where you had to go like stand in line outside for a system, Rich, which people have done for this. But apparently not with Nintendo. And I hope it's not the case with the Switch because I don't want to deal with this crap because I actually will need that. But for this, like, all right, I'll wait. Maybe it'll be in stock in December or something and I'll just grab it then. But it's just unfortunate. I wanted to get it now. I wanted to cover it even. But I'm not going to pay over what it's worth.
Well, there's a few things here. First of all, is it real or is it engineered scarcity? And it's an interesting question. Yeah. Engineered scarcity would not surprise me, but I personally don't believe that. I think that Nintendo is in a position to where they want to make as much money as they can. They have not had a great run for the last couple of years.
This thing's pure profit, too. They should want to sell as many as possible.
So that's why I would be surprised if this were engineered scarcity. They were probably conservative with how much they wanted to produce.
Well, I'll tell you on that real quick, Rich, from what I've seen, at least on NeoGAF with people who purport to be to know the inner workings of various retail stores who ordered a certain amount of them and got only a fraction of them from Nintendo. So if the store said, hey, we want 40 of these, and Nintendo only sent them 6, you know, so it shouldn't be manufacturing issues considering what they're actually manufacturing is not complex, but.
Well, we don't know that. I mean, do you have any idea what it takes to put one of these things together? I mean, theoretically, it should not be complex, but this is a new item. This is a new thing. It's new from the exterior, what it looks like, putting these 30 games on a device, the way that they build the software for the save states, because each of the game has up to 4 save states. You know, you've got the HDMI stuff. Like, I'm not ready to say it's an easy slap it together. Because we've seen a lot of those easy slap it together cash ins on things similar to this with Sega ripoffs, you know, with the boxes that look like the old Segas that have built in games and stuff and other things, and the Atari ones too. Mm-hmm. My impression is that this is a quality product and that it's not just a quick cash in. And I think that has something to do with it. I mean, Nintendo has nothing this holiday but this, and Nintendo needs money. I firmly believe that this is a situation where this is not just a quick cash in, it's a quality product. They are going to have a lot on the market. It may be something to where it was a great idea that came a little too late to get into the hands of all the people that would possibly want one in time to get it for Christmas. So I really don't think here's the thing. You and I probably have similar Twitter feeds when it comes to people in the video game space. And it takes like 35 seconds to look at the Twitter feed from those people. They're all cynical. They're all angry. They're all jaded. Some days I just want to say, why do I even look at this, right? Everyone's like, Nintendo's so dumb. Nintendo's stupid. Nintendo's dumb. They don't know what they're doing. This is the same thing. I'm like, you know what?
Hey, we're venting.
But I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about me. I really think that this is a situation where it's not easy to do things sometimes. This is a great idea. It came in late. They want to make a good product. They don't want to have something that's going to be terrible, break real easily. And I don't know. I'm hoping that there is product on the market. Now, I am willing to pay a premium. You say you're not going to pay more than it's worth, but I'm willing to pay a premium. I'm not willing to pay a $200 premium.
Oh, don't.
But I'm willing to pay a small premium on top of $60 to get a hold of one if that's what it takes. I mean,
after Christmas, these things are going to be everywhere. You know, it's like...
Of course. Yeah, is why it's such an interesting time for this and why it's... could wind up being a missed opportunity by Nintendo, not because of failure to figure out how to do it, just because of the literal logistics of getting these things built and out there into the world.
Yeah, it's just crazy to me because it's like at $60, that's a really good price. That's like something you say, all right, I have no problem buying this regardless of the shortcomings.
Two or three for $60. It's great value.
Yeah, regardless of the shortcomings as far as the cord for the controller goes or whatever other little quirks it has, you're like, man, it's just such a cool novelty item, whether for yourself or for someone else. But then when you push it to like, I'm not going to pay over that.
It's also interesting. I'll tell you, Brian, a colleague, a work associate of mine, found a old Nintendo Entertainment System that she had, not only the old NES, but a bunch of games. And she told me, she's like, I'm so OCD. I kept the manuals and everything. And I tweeted tonight, I picked it up from her, and it's on its way. So even though I don't have an NES Classic, I've now got a legit old NES on its way to me with Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3, RBI Baseball, Metal Gear, Excite Bike, Bubble Bobble, Hogan's Alley, all this great stuff. And it's just ironic that happened today. The real thing. I actually, though, don't know how I'm going to plug it into any of my televisions. Like,
well, that's the thing. This thing is so simple, right? That's the other thing. It's just, it's very simple to hook into your HDTV and everything. And they save give you states. Different options, different ways. Yeah, and you're right. It has the feature to save, but there's also, different ways to display it on your screen and stuff that you can, whether preference or whatever, that it's such a neat little package that gives you everything. You don't have to have a stack of games, it's like basically perfect, in concept. And that's why everybody wants one.
Exactly.
So,
and why I hope, and everybody hopes, that they make multiple versions of these, mini NES, would be
SNES,
great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, mini SNES would be great. Heck, even a mini GameCube. People forget the GameCube had some spectacular games.
Oh,
Star Wars game was amazing. Perfect Darkness, Eternal Darkness. Uh-huh. I mean, this could be the start of a nostalgia trend that I can totally get behind.
Yeah.
Right, being able to have a small package with a tremendous amount of games. And people complain about the mini NES that it doesn't have, any ability to download new stuff or play carts or get connected to the internet. I look at that as a positive.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to really be hurting interest in the thing.
I look at it as a positive. Yeah. This is a purely self-contained little museum of some of the best video games ever made. That is fantastic. I love that. Love it.
Yep. All right. Well, that was fun, Rich. Once again, with another Press Row podcast. Thank you, Rich Grisham. We will be back again soon. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care.